Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Magnets, Crystals, and Pyramids. I am your host, Brother Ankh Rising Sun, your co-host, First Science Officer Lester Loving. Each week we bring to you information for your direct application, for your personal empowerment and transmutation. We say each week, do not just collect data, but take the information and make a better holographic reality in your life, in your world, and in our planetary school bus. At present, there are very short-sighted, ignorant world leaders leading the school bus, our planet Earth, driving it into the realms of being a prison planet chicken farm with intentional dumbing down of the mass population. What you don't know can affect you. The information for your personal awakening and liberation will not be found in mass media. You will find information for your personal use and activation on alternative media such as this program here. And before we begin, I always say, lift your crystals, take hold of your amulets, and apply the gift of your ancestral lineage, the power of the spoken word. Speak into your crystal. Yes, I am divinely directed. Yes, I am divinely awakening to all I am. Yes, I am master of the universe. Yes, I am peeling away all that is less than all I am. Cast an acoustical spell upon your life every day in every way so you can shift the sands of time into a mountain removed for fulfillment of your divine destiny. Tonight we shall have a renowned researcher, scholar, metaphysician in our show sharing with us luminous brilliance and allowing us to have access to information not ordinarily available. I'm speaking of our brother, Dr. Philip Valentine L., and I am going to read his bio. doctor of hygiene science, doctor of classical naturopathy, grandmaster of the metaphysical sciences, a founding father of the conscious community, meta-historian, clinical hypnotherapist, counselor, sacred party creditor, polymath lecturer. Sanu Phil Valentine is the founder, director, and pastor of the Temple of the Healing Spirit, Self-Healing Education Center, co-founder of the University of Kemetan Science Institute for Self-Mastery, and just recently, Whole Wellness Live. A certified member of the International Association of Counselors and Therapists, he received his doctorate in hygiene health science, classical naturopathy from the Life Science Institute of Texas, now merged to the Fit for Life Sciences Institute College of Natural Health in Canada. Dr. Fan also recognized globally as one of the founding fathers of the underground metaphysical grassroots conscious community. A former member of the American Natural Hygienic Society, Dr. Valentine is currently a hygienic science and metaphysical health consultant to doctors and lay practitioners as far away as Azania, South Africa, Canada, Trinidad, Jamaica, England, Ghana, Japan, and the Philippines. For 5 years, Dr. Valentine served as co-director of the original Heal Thyself Natural Living Education Center in Brooklyn and helped create, format, refine, and teach the 21-day therapeutic fasting juice feasting program, the first of its kind to become widely popular with New York's African American community. He also inspired, co-created, and helped develop the now popular Sacred Woman Philosophy, Protocols of Life. Okay, I am back. I'm sorry about that disconnect. Didn't even see that coming. As we were saying, he also inspired, co-created, and helped develop the now popular Sacred Woman Philosophy, Protocols of Life, Health, and Metaphysical Well-Being for the Women, which led to the publishing of the wonderful book by the same name of Queen of Four. Dr. Valentine established a former School of Arcane Sciences for Advanced Studies in Metaphysics and the Occult, and is best known for his ability to decipher and teach the subtlest principles of metaphysics and its application to health, healing, and everyday life in ways that may be understood by both the advanced student and the beginner apprentice. Reverend Dr. Phil Valentine has been honorary guest speaker to the United Nations by invitation of the then Pan-African Congress of Azania, South Africa, where he spoke briefly on the future of health for Africans at home and in the diaspora. He was a committee member and advisor to the Pan-African Review for Scientific Research and Political Studies, where he served as an honorary health consultant to its membership. So, brothers and sisters, I am honored to welcome who I call Big Brother Phil onto the show. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, little brother. How are you?
Thank you. I'm okay, man. The call dropped for a second, and I was like, oh, not again.
Yeah.
Lester called out a minute before the show and said he couldn't make it. So he took off to the high hills on a mission. So,
okay.
So what sticks out in my mind as being a father of the conscious community, what, Phil, what has gone awry with the conscious community? What is going on? They seem to have taken YouTube onto a platform for Ultimate Fighting Championship. What is happening? Please, give us illumination.
Well, yeah, I'm going to address this in more depth and detail because I felt that it warranted a one-to-one instead of an over the phone or second-hand or third-hand delivery of this message. But I will say that I think that there has been a kind of disconnect in the legacy and the passing on of the information and how that information was actually dispersed amongst the family, i.e. those who came to witness and to learn. The platform and the medium, the genre, began to become more competitive and disjointed and dissonant from actually what the study criteria was, and took on a flavor, as you were saying, of MMA or dealing with the hyping of a boxing match between opposites who are going to fight out, and their weapons of choice would be the topic under discussion, which was then imparting the kind of knowledge and metaphysics and history and so forth that has to do with a quiet discernment. Just creating an atmosphere of that type deals with a kind of visceral, and it's more people coming to be entertained and entertrained rather than to sit and learn and reflect. And therefore, the people who created the genre to create that adversarial atmosphere, I told them that they would tend to create hostility because the one side would be bringing their own supporters and their own believers in that particular material, and the other side will be doing the same. So it would become a cult of personality vying for a position of superiority, which is not what my elders taught me. They shared a platform and their knowledge and the way they did it, with the sophistication in which they did it, with the class in which they brought to that platform. I could never say I imitated that because I used me a couple of FUs and, you know, and slang words and so forth, but I never used those words as punctuation, you know, to a sentence. I never used the word, you know, the so-called N-word in order to, you know, identify anyone who, unless it was somebody who was actually doing damage to my community in such a way that they had to be called out for what they were. But, you know, my angst on the platform and Bobby, and I guess we opened that door based upon the fact that everything that we did was, as you were saying, in the underground. And because it was in the underground, we felt free to open up. And we were dealing with a demographic that understood where we were coming from, the kind of passion, the kind of frustration that we weren't, you know, being told the truth and so forth. But I'm going to address it. I'm not going to call any names, but I am going to address situations and what I thought was wrong. And then anyone who fits the bill or anyone who recognizes what it is that I'm describing can fit the character to that. So I am not, like I said, it will be more in depth. I'll be more calculating, and I'll come as a benevolent parent figure, but I'm not going to step away from the I told you so.
How do you think this has impacted our community as far as the cohesiveness, the networking, because I remember hearing your speech at National Black Theater a few years ago, and how you described things as being stratified. And I just want to touch on that a little bit before the next question mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah, stratifying, it did. It fragmented us. It created a type of relationship dissonance. And what it did was divide us more than it did bring us together. The young people who were actually exercising and actually casting that type of spell on the people, the young brothers and sisters who kind of looked to them for guidance of what the conscious community is supposed to look like, the people doing that, even though they came up in our orbit from the underground, they weren't really learning how to apply it, because they were then taking how the streets and rap music, especially when rap became more hostile and became more competitive and, you know, talking about I'm going to wet you, I'm going to cut you, and I'm going to do this and all that kind of stuff, and brick gang colors and, you know, giving up the high signs with the fingers. That's the kind of mentality that began to leech its way into that platform or into that genre, into that venue. And I warned that if you do that, you'll then bring it into this contentious atmosphere, stratifying our people into camps, into cults of personality, and then it's going to end up being a physical thing. And it did a couple of times. And so those people who had cameras that were actually instigating that type of atmosphere, I warned them, even in public, that that would happen. In fact, they edited, as they were there, they edited a lot of what I was saying as a warning, because I guess they felt that if I began to say that that particular platform was bad and it shouldn't be pursued, then somehow those the people would see that I've already decried that kind of presentation of the material. And so the things I said to them in private, because I'm not like one who comes yelling and screaming and bringing anything dirty laundry or nothing. I expect the brothers who supposedly respected me as an elder to do the right thing, but they didn't. They pursued it based upon whatever mentality they felt they needed to have. They did what they had to do in order to either make money or to make personality or to make a name or to keep a specific type of energy moving along so that the attention was grabbed. But they weren't getting the scholars and so forth. They were just getting people who had a lot of very visceral information, and they were putting them up with the visceral information and then exalting them as these, you know, super teachers, master teachers, which they're not. What I call them were cut-and-paste scholars, because the masters who came before me and what it is that the people who are in my particular orbit, like C. Freeman L., Brother Taj Tariq, and Brothers Aleem Bey and Mfundishi and Baba Heru, these brothers and sisters, especially Queen of Four and Lady Prema, and all these people were students. They studied. They went into books, they read, and these things were, they didn't just read, you know, cut and paste people's information and then put it into a dialogue with the venue that they had as far as computers and so forth. These people really went in, mined it, rolled up their sleeves, got their hands and fingers dirty, and brought that information out. And then everybody said, okay, it's here, so let's just go ahead and exploit it. And that's what had happened. Instead of everybody enjoying it for what it was, it became a venue for exploitation. It became a rallying cry for exploitation. Exploitation based upon the consciousness of people, exploiting the consciousness of people, using it as a way for finance or for publicity and for personality. And it then began to degenerate, as I knew it would, as I predicted it would.
Wow. What is going on in this country and the planet, Baba Sanu? We see the no longer subtle, covert racism. Now it is overt and in your face. How does that align with where we are today And Lester shared with me earlier this week, and actually spoke on it last week, that today is an auspicious day where our sun is in direct alignment with the central sun, or I think it would be called Hunabku. Is there any connection with what's going on? As Marvin Gaye would say, what is going on? What's going on, brother? Please bring us the speed.
Well, I'm not sure. One of my favorite songs, by the way, that thing always touches me every time I hear it. That must have been some kind of angel was playing the keys and putting the words in his mouth. Even the guy playing the bass was in a divine space. What's his name? Wow. He's the greatest bass player, pop bass player, and jazz. That song and what he's saying, what's going on, people keep asking that question and ask me that question, like what's going on, especially politically in the world and so forth. It's not that racism is coming out overtly. It's always been overt. It's just that we become so numb that we don't see it actually anymore. They become, like you said, more covert with it. But the overt racism is a cleansing for me. People starting to come out to show their racism just shows their sickness. And as a naturopathic healer, not a healer, but a naturopathic facilitator of healing, forgive me for saying that, I say all of my Orishas and the Charus. The fact of the matter is that we are watching a catharsis, a societal catharsis. We're watching a cleansing of a sickness, a cancer, that people have been kind of, the same way medication tends to just numb the symptom. I think that what happened is that the so-called Democrats, which are essentially nothing more than communists and socialists who follow this European's isms, one of those isms, socialism, communism, and, you know, democratism, republicanism, all of these are Europeans attempting to emulate what our ancestors did here in Americas as the Native Americans. I'm not talking about the ones that came over the Bering Strait Bridge, the Asian faction that now calls themselves Native Americans. I'm talking about the indigenous so-called black people that were here who were actually the remnants of the so-called Olmec peoples that were essentially wiped out or absorbed or were enslaved and told that they were brought here from Africa so that they could co-opt this land and tell other people that came over here as well as conquerors themselves that they were the Native Americans. And you notice that when it comes to them getting the gratuities of Native Americanism, that the European works with them because the European knows the true history, that they were also conquerors and that they took it from them and they assumed the label of Native American and gave it to them when the true Native Americans were the peoples who were absorbed here, the black people that were enslaved. Some of them, of course, were brought from Africa, but a lot of them, the majority of them, were actually here. So as far as what it is, you know, I kind of lost my train of thought. There's so much going on in my mind right now regarding that. But I could tell you that racism, the way we're looking at it coming to the forefront, the way we're looking at it coming to the surface, I think it's a good thing because now we know what we're looking at. Now we know what we're addressing. Now we know who's who, you know, because if you're medicating something the way the so-called Democrats, or what I call the Democrats versus the Republicans, the Democrats itself have been kind of giving us a salve, covering over the leprosy and the pustules of what this particular civilization has embodied. And the Republicans, they want to come in and you know, just go ahead and kill off the disease by shooting guns through it, or, you know, regulating it, throwing it off, or building a wall for the people and putting the lepers inside the wall, that type of thing. So these two factions of thought, the left wing and the right wing, are on the same damn buzzard, and we have not yet seen that. I get very upset. I'm going to close this particular section out. I get very upset with what I see and hear from the brothers and sisters today, especially when they're on Facebook. And every time the European or the factions that are against Trump and the rest of these guys, every time they come out with a meme or every time they come out with something, we just go ahead and paste it and send it down the pipe to everybody as, you know, look how mad we get. Look at what he did today. Not realizing that if you're against something and you're not dealing with the Maatian principle, if you're against someone and you're against something and so vehemently opposed to something, what the hell are you for? And if it's this person that you're actually against, who are you for? So there's no balance there. All we are is doing the same thing we've done as, quote, Negroes first, as blacks next, and African Americans after that. We keep reacting to our condition and our circumstance. So every time somebody gives me some kind of nonsense about Trump, like I really give a damn, it just shows me how completely clueless dark folks, my people, are to the situation at its hands. They look like they need something to be angry with or angry at. So they pick this orange-haired clown and say, look at what he did next. Then who are you for? What are you doing to contradict what it is that you say is the problem instead of keep giving me ideas about what the problems are? And this is how really frustrating it is to deal with my people, because they become insane and asinine in their reactions to conditions that they should have critical thinking about.
Thank you for that. When you brought up a good point, how do you see the impact of Facebook? And family, I would like to first acknowledge King Simon Productions. Dr. Phil Valentine will be in Brooklyn on the 26th of February, later this month. And this is also to bring more awareness, and he's going to share more. He's just touching on the subjects, some of the subjects on air, but the gist of what his message is will be at the event, and it will be is that going to be sort of a closed door? I guess it would be a closed door. It's not going to be on Facebook live stream nor Instagram. You're going to have to be there in person. You have to bring your humanity.
Well, no, let me correct you, please. No. Let me correct you. It is going to be live streamed. I don't want the people to not think because I know. Yeah, it's going to be streamed. In fact, you can go up to Brother Joel Benjamin's Facebook, and I believe his Facebook page, Joel Benjamin's Facebook page, has the link for you to be able to purchase your pay-per-view for that event. Yeah, it's going to be streamed live.
Oh, great!
For
great,
those of
great.
You who can't
and,
be there in Brooklyn.
Yes. Okay. Excellent. That's the correct way to use Facebook. I mean, I see everything short of people taking off their tops on Facebook. I think it should be used as a medium of progression. What's your words and what's your wisdom to share with the young folks about how to use technology instead of being used by Facebook? Do you have anything to share?
Well, as far as technology is concerned, the one thing that you cannot do is to lose your humanity. In lieu of it, I've watched our fascination with the melding of biology, of metal with flesh, and how that's supposed to allow for us to become even greater, stronger, smarter. And this is the trick. It's a trap. It's a trap I spoke about at the first. If you all were there, I spoke about the introduction of the so-called labyrinth group and the fear of a group entity called the Animus, who essentially gained consciousness as a synthetic entity, synthetic race, a race based upon mineral, metal, and technology. And they gain consciousness by absorbing your life stream consciousness and become conscious. And it's not just something that they do maliciously. This is just a life form that does that. And I think that people's interest in this enhancement that they get, this virtual reality that comes from them twisting metal and twisting aspects of the material world in order to enhance what they already have as part of their body, the ability to interface again with silicone, as I was saying to you, that somehow the silicone part of us, the part of us that is conscious as a silicone entity, as well as a carbon-based entity, the fusion of that was somehow displaced, and we were separated from that ability to interfuse carbon with the silicone matrix and therefore create a more efficient entity to live in third density. We don't have that anymore, and I think that the subconscious need for us to meld with technology is somehow that particular genetics, that particular gene, that particular aspect of us crying out to our biological form in some way to become more conscious of interfacing with a part of us. Instead, we have done it on the outside. We're doing it on the outside rather than raising it as an aspect of ourselves from the inside.
That's deep. So we're in a mess. Question I have, what do you offer for solutions, or how can we, what do you, would you say for us to focus on in the years ahead? How bad or how rocky do you think things are going to get?
Interesting. Good question. It's going to get crazy. Remember I said about 10 years ago, we won't see clearly until 2020. And that it would be the only time we would begin to see our fate or see what is necessary for us to actually do what we're doing. And I think Donald Trump is actually forcing us to come to that place, to that threshold where we have to break through all of our limitations, all of our ignorances, and all of the stupidity. And I think 2020, just like we get 2020 vision, I think the 2020 vision for our first eye, which people call the third eye, I think 2020 vision for the first eye will at that time begin to open. It will begin to become more plausible as a believable aspect of ourselves. People who are even Catholics and Christians will talk about the third eye or the first eye because they'll go to their, I believe it's either Luke 13 or one of the, I'm not sure, where they say thine eyes must become one. And for that body to be full of light, and I'm paraphrasing, they'll come to understand and overstand. Christianity will then be exposed as nothing more than a hodgepodge of scientific theory and theorem mixed in together into a belief structuring format, what I call a theopsychotic mix, where they believe that the God matrix, essentially outside of ourselves, and I do believe we do have a so-called creator, but I don't believe it's one sitting on a cloud with a white man with a white beard sitting on it. They will come to the understanding that, first and foremost, the Bible and all these other so-called sacred books are actually nothing more than fairy tales that were essentially upgraded for adults and threaded with what we call in metaphysics universal truth. So universal truth can be believed and can be formatted in any way, in any language, and you can call it by any name you want, but universal truth can be understood and understood and overstood by anyone. But the thing is, to keep us separated, we call God by different names. We go by different rituals to reach the same point of enlightenment and learning and knowledge. But we believe that the way that someone else believes to speak, the way that someone else prays, is ridiculous. And this so-called thing called religion was set aside or placed into our mix in order to keep us separated. as a humanity, so that the energy from all that hostility could be fed upon by those who are actually our controllers.
Wow. Announcing Reverend Phil Valentine will be in Brooklyn Sunday, February 26, 2017 at St. Francis College. This is a King Simon production. You will have performances by Red Pill and Blue Pill, Tahir, RBG, and Prince Imagine, featuring an on-stage interview by Brother Rich. No tickets sold at doors. $50 on the day of. RSVP now. You can reach for tickets, live stream, vending, 347-496-1022. 347-496-1022. Or go to www.kingsimonproductions.eventbrite.com. Big Bro Phil, are we the only life form on this planet?
No, I can look around and see dogs, cats. I can look around and see birds.
That was a good one. Are we on the? You know where I'm going, right? Okay.
Yeah, I know you. No, we're not. Of course not. We've always been sharing our planet. Actually, it's not a planet; it's a plane. And I get into that in our university at our what we call our perfection level, which is the third degree. I could touch upon that to let you know that we are in a vortex, and that vortex they call by different names: Merkaba, hologram, holographic universe, that type of thing. But we are a self-contained isolation within the dynamic of the plane of matter. The plane of matter extends forever. What we think is a horizon or an ending, depending on the way that our eyes work and our perception of reality works, the plane that we're on goes on forever. We are just within a specific vortex, and we are surrounded by an ice ring that just kind of tells us that we're being incarcerated at this time, and that we can't get beyond a certain point, and we're trying to negotiate our way out of this gulag that we call our plane of existence, or we call Earth. At this time, there are people, there are entities that are visiting us extradimensionally and interdimensionally. We have a threshold that we're operating in, an energy threshold, something I spoke about at least 25 years ago. If you were there in the gatherings of the masters, I spoke about the fact that we are encased in a hydrogen, there's a hydrogen dome above us, a dome based on hydrogen. And this is before everybody started getting into the, you know, the flat earth and all that. You can go back into the records and see that I was talking about a hydrogen envelope that we were in. And now most people don't understand, and they're just not coming to the realization. Something that the metaphysicians and the ancient masters passed on down to us, that very few of us take the time to actually understand, that that all elements can be manifested into something that is tangible. For instance, when you look at the hydrogen at this time, hydrogen essentially now has, and I think we discussed this earlier, hydrogen has now been turned into a kind of quasi-metal. They finally are now beginning to understand. When I told you about the break in the hydrogen dome that caused the 40 days and 40 night flood, and that what we're looking at when we look up at the so-called sky and we see the Milky Way, that's where the actual split or the cut or the break of the dome took place and was repaired. So there's definitely a kind of understanding now that we are in a crystallized matrix. And if you look at the flower of life, you'll get an idea of how we are formulated. Our ancestors gave us clues. We just don't look at them because we're so busy looking at scientific reality. We don't see that the symbols that they left us are simply the way energy takes the form, takes its form when we are investigating it from the first eye perspective, not through a telescope or a microscope. Because if your first eye does not bend, your first eye is not a lens that bends. Your two eyes are the eyes of illusion. And see, when you look through a telescope, you have to look through a concave lens. And if you look through a concave lens, you're going to look at the distortion of reality, which is what these idiots who are actually telescopes and so forth, they're looking at distortions, and they are making their sciences around distortions. They don't see that you cannot see the reality with the present eyeballs you got. You have to see it with the first eye, like our ancestors did. And they saw beyond the concave illusion that we call our reality.
Wow. I have one more question before we open up the lines. Why are the black man, why is the black man so feared on this, in this so-called civilization at present? Why is he so feared?
Because, yeah, it's a good question. I believe that it's because of the what they know that, that one of my elder sisters spoke about, Dr. Frances Cress-Wellsley. She spoke very eloquently about the fact that whites fear the black penis. They fear the black, or what we call the hypercarbonated entity, because they know that their carbon recessiveness essentially means their doom. I mean, if they enter their whiteness and they need to propagate that recessive gene, they can't actually interface with one that has a dominant factor, carbonated factor. And that fear of annihilation, genetic annihilation, has been exteriorized in everything that they deal with in their society. And anybody, if you want a real answer for that, you just go to that most eloquent goddess sister, Dr. Frances Cress-Wellsley, for the definitive answer.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let's go to the phones. Area code 215-715. Area code 215-715. Do you have a question for Dr. Phil?
Greetings. Greetings. I think I'm on. I was just listening in. I didn't know that. I didn't formulate a question. Brother Valentine, I used to come to Brooklyn on Carroll Street and sit at your feet. And you know, get the teachings years ago.
Indeed, we have to. We have to bring all of us back together one time.
Yeah, so I'm listening in from Philadelphia. And I didn't,
oh, welcome.
Thank you. I didn't have a question. I'm just inquisitive about, you know, Marvin Gaye's thing, what's going on. And, you know, being an elder myself, I'm so inquisitive, and that's why I was listening in. So I'm gonna pass it on so someone else can get in if they do have a question. But thank you so much.
Hold on. Before you go, I'm going to ask, how, when you used to come to 1241 Carroll Street, how did that impact you, and how did it affect your life when the classes were there?
Okay, well, basically, it made me more of consciously aware that life didn't, you know, wasn't just what, you know, what you saw with your two eyes, and you know that there were other things that were going on, and I just basically, you know, like listened to other people's advice, because Bobby Hemmett was coming through then, Brother Dalton was coming through, Lester Loving was coming through, you know, all the ones from back, like say in the 90s. And I did have an experience one time when I left Phil Valentine's. We were driving back from Philadelphia. I'm driving back from New York, from Brooklyn to Philadelphia, and I was the designated driver. And I don't know what happened, you know, at this particular thing, because there used to be so many people there and you know, so many heavy hitters. But on the way back, time collapsed for me. It was like when I left Brooklyn and got on the highway, and mm-hmm. the next thing you know, mm-hmm. I was at the Pennsylvania toll thing. And I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, what in the world? You know, I couldn't explain it. I couldn't explain it.
Uh-huh.
And I was driving. I was like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, that was how, you know, how powerful some of the sessions were, you know, the energy that was, you know, trolling around there and everything.
Indeed.
So
yeah.
I
indeed.
I just wanted to share that, you know, that was, you know,
thank
one of the
you.
Experiences that we had had. And sometimes Queen of Food would come through and Brother Fatah. And one time
mm-hmm.
Ayanna Van Sant popped in.
That's right. We had Ayanna Van Sant was out there for our goddess program, the Sacred Woman. We brought her in for the goddess month. We had pictures, beautiful pictures. In fact, in the back of my book, The Wounded Womb, we have pictures of that time when she was there.
Oh, okay. And I just remember, you know, just being there with the crowd, and it would get so crowded that, you know, we'd be outside in the backyard and sitting in the dining room and packed in the living room and out in the hallway and going up the stairs. And
oh,
sometimes
yeah.
you have to go down. You have to go down in the basement. You know, where you had your tables
yes.
on the side with your heavy duty stuff. That's
indeed.
How crowded it
remember?
Would get. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it would get, and we would drive the neighborhood crazy. Because we'd be there until like 4 or 5 in the morning playing
right.
drums in the back. And
right, because we, yeah. you know, we tried to get up there at least 2-3 times a month, and this was back in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was influenced by the layout in Phil's place, having the big pillows on the floor. And you had the beautiful goddesses in the kitchen preparing and serving food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
you know, you were giving me a template, and I was like, wow, because I had never seen anything like that. And so that was, you know, eye-opening for me.
I forgot the brother's name. He wrote, he had the experience with the aliens, and he came there that time.
Raleigh Martin.
Yeah, Raleigh Martin. I still have his thing that he done for me. I pull it out
yeah.
and read it every once in a while.
Yeah. He passed.
Oh, I didn't know he put the ancestors now.
Yeah,
okay, so
also
I'm going to relinquish now because I'm taking up too much time and, you know, and daydreaming. We have to be present. Even though, you know, the past is wonderful, we still have to be present.
Indeed. Thank you.
You know what? She just reminded me. I think it was you also had a person come to your gathering who wrote the book. I think it was the Mohawk Montauk Project.
Al Bielek. Al Bielek and Preston Nichols.
Right. And
yes.
and I have his a couple of his books.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Preston Nichols wasn't there, but I think Al Bielek was. But you know that.
Yeah,
Al
and them came together. My friend actually went to pick him up from the airport. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
he
was the one.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that came back through time from that Philadelphia
yeah.
experiment.
Philadelphia
uh-huh.
experiment,
yeah.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so those of the listening audience, if you've heard what we just said, Montauk used to have pyramids on the beach before the Army Corps of Engineers removed the pyramids. The language that
yes.
the Montauk, Phil, go ahead and touch on it, Phil, about the language and the
well,
pyramids
essentially,
out of Montauk.
Yeah, they. Yeah, what happened was, and I don't want to get too long involved in it, they were saying that the reason why they were removed is because They were being used at one time to travel through wormholes that got them through the dome into a different dimensional reality. And they had to get rid of it because of what came through. And what had happened was the same thing that happened over in CERN. Something came through and began destroying everything. So the Army Corps of Engineers had to get rid of a lot of the materials that were reminiscent or representative of the technologies that would bend space and time and open portals. So they were into that long before everybody was getting into Stargate and CERN and all the rest of these things. We were essentially the Gathering of the Masters was a place where everything that is being touted today as, you know, super advancements, we were talking at it about these things as matter-of-fact realities. So a lot of our people don't realize that we're not very surprised at what we're looking at, because all of this was introduced 30, 35 years ago and in forums that were in little houses, in little small sidewalks or in storefronts, like Heal Thyself. These are where the conscious community really was birthed. These were the wound. You know, this was the embryonic stage of what became known as the conscious community, because all of what everybody who was there began to do was to bring forward information that was hidden from us, suppressed from us in the regular education system and in the churches and in all of the places that they kept our materials and paraphernalia, the museums and so forth. They most people didn't have that. But the beauty was that the courageous elders that we had that went into the belly of the beast and extrapolated this information to let us know that we had a legacy, a great legacy, builders of civilization, creators of civilization, doing things that are still have not yet been usurped. And what that did was give the next generation like us, when we came along, we said, yes, we know the history. And I went to my master teacher, Dr. John Henry Clark, and to all the rest of them, Dr. Ben, and, you know, what were these people about? I mean, we know what they did. We know they built pyramids, they built all these things, because everybody's saying that Martians did it, but we know they were the ones that did all these things. They had flight. But who and what were they? What was their spirituality like? What were their mindsets like? We didn't get that from them, because that's not what they were supposed to give to us. That task was then handed to us to find out what the spirituality was. What did they teach about the divine in us? And so we pursued that part of it, where they took our story, which they call history, which I call what they do on the History Channel, the Twistry Channel, because that's what they teach, Twistry. We had the my story, okay, where it was his story, we dealt with my story. So if you put those two words together, my story, you get an mystery. So we had to study the mystery system. So that was for us to do. That was for what Lester to do. Lester was supposed to be building those pyramids because it was our turn to take the next level of our own legacies and to fuse them together, the history and the mystery. And that's what he really was the foundation for what is called today the so-called conscious community, because the conscious community started with, you know, the Black Panthers, with becoming conscious, with Marcus Garvey, with Malcolm X and Nation of Islam, with even with Dr. York and what's the name, Yahweh Ben Yahweh. That was the rising of consciousness all across the country. That was actually a groundswell that most people weren't ready for because we were locked into religious mindsets. So we tended to, in the underground, we were seated in the underground. We sprouted a little bit. People began taking pictures of us when we sprouted to the surface. And you remember what I told you, that the Gathering of the Masters was created because I came out in 1985 against something called HIV/AIDS. Where everybody was believing that we were getting attacked by a new type of virus that led to something with no cure and stuff. I said, this is nonsense. And then, of course, I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of people who I thought were my friends and didn't understand or believe me. So from the time 1985 through 1989, I was kicked off. I didn't have an ability to interface with my people over the air, over the radio anymore. So I had to make a forum. And in 1989, I brought together the first forum for Gatherings of Masters, which was to expose the AIDS hoax. And at that time, it was way beyond people. They were like, okay, well, this sounds right, but what? Why are they saying all these things? Well, it wasn't until like 1992, 1993, when Curtis Koss, one of my students who vehemently tested me on whether or not I was right about that, he actually relented after all of the investigations and put on a massive, massive gathering at Al Sharpton's place there in Harlem, where for 6.5 to 8 hours we had Gary Null, Queen of Four, we had everybody from the natural healing community dismiss, even the New York Times was there, dismiss this nonsense that they were trying to hoax us with. So that's where the Gathering of the Masters actually started. It was started as a countermeasure against the lies about what they were saying in our community.
I also want to share what I remember about Montauk. The Montauk Indians spoke a language called Mi'kmaq. And according to the history, Thomas Jefferson, who was a Mason, went to the Montauk Indians to learn the language because they had a direct lineage to Atlantis. And I remember there was a trip that Little Flower put for us to go out to Montauk Point. And the chief at that time, the reigning chief of the Montauk Indians, last name was Farrell. And you have Mi'kmaq language going up into Canada, and it has been found that it was a dialect of the ancient Egyptian. So it was it was all one language at one time. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, and it opened doors. That was the language that they said opened sesame with.
Wow. We'll take another call. Then I want to ask you about that awesome book, Wounded Womb. 347-994. 347-994. Do you have a question or a word to share? 347-994. Welcome. Okay. One last chance. 347-994. Say hi. Well, thanks for listening. Let's move to the next call.
Hi.
347-393. Do you have a question to share or a comment?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Yes. My name is Saeed. What's up, Brother Saeed? How you feeling, man?
What's up? How are you?
Yeah, I want to let you know, man. I went to HBCU. It was called Chain University. And a lot of brothers know about you out there, man. And, like, a lot of the awareness is getting out, especially amongst my peer group and all that. My question for you is that, what you think about this Trump, like, the NAFTA thing? Because it's kind of confusing because he's talking about how, like, he wants to get rid of NAFTA. And as we know, NAFTA was a bad trade deal. So is it? I feel like he's, like, controlled opposition. Do you feel like he's just saying it just to say it, or is he really going to try to get dismissed NAFTA? Like, what's your views on that?
Well, that's a good question because we don't know what the thing is. What we're doing is that we're, like I said, witnessing a very sophisticated demonstration of the Hegelian dialectic played out before us in the media. So what you have to do is you have to be very discerning. You can't take a side in this because, as I keep telling my brothers and sisters, we do not have a horse in this race. However, we can profit from the race. See what I'm saying? Because you don't have to ride the horse to win. See what I'm saying? What you need to do is start building a business because Lord knows if we don't have anything in the White House today, we got a businessman. See what I'm saying?
Yes,
we got, you know, it's, like I keep telling you, it's only business.
Yes.
Until we get our heads out of our emotional backsides, we will not see what it is that we have. Like I said, we don't have to be the jockey to win the race.
Yeah.
We can watch the race, bet the right way, know who to bet on, and then put our monies where our mouth is instead of crying the blues and having these hormonal attacks like you're getting yours every month. I can't believe it that, you know, people, men acting like they got periods. Look what he's doing today.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't give a damn. Who gives a damn?
Yeah.
Stop talking to like men and saying, what you going to do? Now, you know what the opposition is. If he's that old outright as a racist, be thankful you know he's an outright racist. He ain't covert like this woman he was running against.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, I think that, what we're looking at, and I keep telling people that this is a war between secret societies. You gotta start
that's
there.
Deep
you
to say. That's a deep statement. Wow.
Yeah. This is.
Wow.
It's a war between secret societies.
That's
it's the
crazy.
Jesuits. It's the Jesuits who essentially are running everything for the New World Order. They're the New World Order. The Jesuits running together with the Sabbatean Zionist Jew. Not the what do you call it, Jew that we see. Or actually the Ashkenazi and the rest of these others who play at being Jew because they're not the real Jew.
Right,
but anyway,
exactly.
The main thing is that there is an alignment of a criminal element called the Sabbatean Jew who is working for the Vatican. That's the Rothschild, Soros, and the rest of these creatures. So what you're looking at essentially is working, what do you call it, Masonic order. The oldest order, one of the oldest white orders called the Order of Solomon. That's who Trump is. Trump is part of the Order of Solomon, and he's part of the old Knights Templar that were attacked by the Vatican back when they killed off the head of the Knights Templar, Jacques de Molay, when they ambushed him.
Wow, I didn't
even
know that. Wow, that's interesting.
Right. So what happened is he is from that old school, Scottish Rites Masons, who were actually attacked. In fact, they just the Pope just went after the Knights Malta because they surrounded Trump and gave him the protection against anybody who would want to come at him. And so the Pope disbanded the Knights Malta because the Pope is a Jesuit, which is not supposed to happen. The white Pope is never supposed to be a Jesuit. But they don't know what this crypto Jesuit is. But anyway, that's what you're looking at, family. You're looking at a war between secret societies for control of the
American. One more question, real quick. One question and statement. My statement is like they had to take destroy like the hip hop, like you said with the rap music, because like a lot of the conscious rappers, they deep in the underground. The only ones that's mainstream that talk consciousness is Kendrick Lamar, Lupe Fiasco, not really like mainstream, but it's only a few. But what's your take far with the hip hop? I thought like they had to destroy the hip hop. Like far as like commercially,
If you look at my tapes and going back in the day, I already said a lot about it. But you know, new factions like yourself, new jacks like yourself, new kids on the block. I don't want to say that. That's a horrible way to call you new kids on the block. But anyway, your brothers who are now coming conscious from that community. I really applaud the fact that you all are seeking out the knowledge and that you all are going to be carrying the torch forward. And thing is that hip-hop is not the same as rap, and it tends to blend the two together. And rap music was essentially what it is. The old form of rap was like when my friend Gary Bird was doing it at the end of his shows. That was one of the original rappers back in the day. But essentially, as far as what hip-hop became, hip-hop was a genre that was created after they attacked the black music, because they knew that that was our spiritual, charge. In other words, when you hear songs like "Ain't No Stopping Us Now," these types of things get our spirits
John McFadden
going.
And John Whitehead.
So they had to undermine.
Cool.
had to undermine that music. They had to take it down. So what they did was they took the music from out of the schools. They took
the
learn musicians, and they used to take that out of the schools. They even took the what do you call those places where the pawn shops where you used to go and get your instruments cheap. It took those out the community. So the kids didn't have an ability to play.
Yeah.
So what happened was the kids began to take the very records that were being put out there. They took those and turned that turntable into an instrument. and then that became another genre that they began to pimp. So,
the people
don't understand the history. Some of the young people don't even understand the true history of hip hop. But hip hop came out as a way of, first of all, to get us back on the track to be happy.
It sounded like,
but
the
it's
oppressed,
also
like
a
voice
place
the
where.
Yeah,
but it was also a place where the young people could actually attack and get back at what it is that they knew to be the injustices of the world.
Right.
And that was more clearly, was never more clearly done by my brothers in Public Enemy. And they're the ones who actually set the genre for how to use that format. But then, of course, they got attacked by the Sabbatean Jew because it began to wake people up, and that's not what you wanted to do.
Right.
You know, like Jimmy Iovine and all the rest of them, they all started bringing out polluting hip-hop, you know, bringing on people, the white boys that can rap, but of course,
they had to bring Elvis Presley. Right.
Yeah,
that's
they had
why,
to bring an Elvis
music,
Presley named Eminem
yep.
into it, you know.
That's why I guess like Tupac Shakur had to go, huh? Tupac had to go. Yeah, he talked a lot of good stuff.
Well, yeah, Tupac
say.
Had to
he
go.
He had to go, man.
And, you know, again,
he had to go.
Yeah. But some people say he didn't. He's still alive. He's still in Cuba.
But, yeah, like I wanted to say, like I said with that, like I said, some of the rappers are still, you know, saying that one named Cannabis, that's another independent artist. There's a few brothers who talk a lot of conscious stuff. They just not, they on underground, way underground. But Cannabis is deep. You should check him out when you get a chance, brother, when you get time.
No. I did. I checked him out. I like his work.
Yeah. He had this song called Channel Zero. Channel Zero is like a deep song. Check that one out when you get a minute. Mm. Channel Zero.
Okay. All right.
I appreciate everything you're doing, man.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Yes.
And please listen in. I want to give a special shout out to Brother Jay from X-Clan because their music is definitely progressive, revolutionary,
and awakening
during the conscious wave. So, Brother Jay, you know, that's a neighbor.
Very good. Very good. I mean, my fault because his father was a friend of my father and mother at that time as well. And their father, who actually put them out there, Sonny Carson.
He had
their family. And, by all means, X-Clan. You know, they're the ones who essentially were the father's real godfather and grandfathers of what hip-hop really was supposed to be about.
Yes. Thank you again, 347-393. Could you share with us before the next call about your book? And it's almost like a reference book, Wounded Womb. Please tell us about that. What was your inspiration?
Yeah, that book, the inspiration was back at the time when Afua and I were together. We were holding programs for women who at that time or during that time frame, there was a kind of epidemic of black women with fibroid tumors and prolonged menses and so forth. Well, while Afua was working on the physical therapeutics, I worked on the psycho-spiritual. And what I came to find out in my investigation after I put the first pamphlet of The Wounded Womb out, which was about maybe 25, 50 pages, it came into about 300 pages after more research, and it ended up being 1,500 pages that I had to cut down into 700 pages because I knew black folks weren't going to buy a book for 1,500 pages to read. But the book essentially evolved because what I was speaking about at that time, back in the early 1990s, late 1980s, 1990s, was way ahead of the curve, the believability curve of people. And at that time, feminism was rearing its ugly head. So anytime I began speaking as a man about what women needed, they began to attack that. But hundreds of books came out about women writing about what men should be doing and needing, and nobody really paid attention to that. So what happened was the information I was speaking about what it is that psycho-spiritually was going on with the feminine principle, not just women, but the feminine principle itself. When I began to speak about the feminine principle and all that entailed, I began to do more and more investigation into what the disturbance in that force would look like. And then I began to put out what I knew metaphysically that would mean. But then I needed to verify, because people would be telling me, well, why you say that? Well, what's your proof? Well, the more and more I began to investigate, the more proof I began to dredge up and mine in conjunction with everything that I was saying. So I had to kind of revise the book a few times by going into the previous template and upgrading it with the up-to-date scientific material that actually supported what I was saying related to the metaphysics. So the physics had to match the metaphysics. So I put the metaphysics down first, which is why you see the books in two parts. It starts off with the anatomy and metaphysics and then deals with the politics and economics. So essentially I had to really start with the metaphysical and then kind of bring, as you were saying, the references of all the books that I've read, all the books that I researched, and they're back there, about 125 of them, and you have supportive evidence that everything I'm saying in the book actually can be supported by the scientific research, by the actual not only empirical data, which is the one that you can get from dealing one-to-one, but the scientific data, laboratory research.
So, Phil, before we take the next call, why do so many sisters have fibroids?
Well, a fibroid, as I say in the book, is a kind of keloiding of the wound that a woman feels from her own psychospiritual pain. It has to do with a concerted attack against what is known as the feminine ego. And I don't mean that in a bad sense. Women, when they feel the deepest kind of pain, because women are essentially more gossamer and are more porous to feelings. And whereas men say, why do you have any feelings? We do have feelings, but we don't vibrate them as deeply as women do. And the place that a woman harmonizes her whole entire body is in that little section that she has called her womb. So whenever there is a great, great pain or something that she has really felt that cut her to the core, she creates a kind of psychic schism or psychic displacement of the harmonizing energies that her womb has. And then that thing, depending on how deeply that pain is and how long she holds on to that pain, it begins to cut a swath in that. And the body automatically, because it's a radiative energy in that area, the body automatically rushes materials, cauterize it. So not only does the body heal from a metaphysical perspective, a psychological perspective, by actually rushing extra fibrin, look up that word fibrin, that is what is collecting around the womb that creates the fibroid tumor. And that is usually there to repair. Fibrin, if you have a cut, fibrin is rushed to the cut that becomes the scab. Fibrin is the way the body heals itself. So if a woman has all these incredible amounts of fibrin collected in that area, it means that she was scarred. But her scarring starts psychologically, and that's where it actually happens. That's why you can go to a doctor and they say, well, how does fibroid tumor start? What happens with fibroid tumor? They don't know. They'll just tell you, okay, let's wait. Ask any woman who's been there and says she has a fibroid tumor. The first thing the doctor says, well, there's one that's really, it's about the size of a pea or the size of a small grape. Don't worry about it. Here's some, what do you call it? They don't know what it causes. They don't know why it starts, you see? And then they say, well, if it grows any bigger, we'll cut it out. That's the type of thing that they do. But again, what causes it is what we were dealing with when I was in there in Brooklyn at the time, and we were dealing with women with fibroid tumors. And the book the inspiration for the book came from a study of the metaphysics surrounding female diseases. So that's it.
Excellent. How can people purchase the book Wounded Womb?
Well, they'll have to go up online. I have a publishing deal. It's called Print on Demand. And Print on Demand is that you go up online And once you have made your order and you made your payment, they print a brand new book for you. So you have to go up to lulu.com. And if you want to put this down, I can put Lulu, L-U-L-U.com / content, C-O-N-T-E-N-T, content, another / and then you put these numbers in, 216-6333, 216-6333. So lulu.com / content / 216-6333. And then that will put you directly into the purchase page. And if you do buy the book, by the way, family, please, after you've read it, right there on that page, you can leave a comment about how it sucked, please say so, because it then gets a, you know, it then helps in the promotion of the book.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, family, February 26th at St. Francis College in Brooklyn. Dr. Phil Valentine returns to Brooklyn. King Simon Productions, call 347-496-1022. Vendors, live stream, tickets, 347-496-1022. Let's take the next call. Area code 617-386. Welcome. Do you have a question or comment to share? Area code 617-386. Talk to us. Last chance. Well, thank you for listening. 617-386. Next caller, 347-772. Do you have a word to share?
I'm getting feedback from you.
Yeah.
There's an echo.
All right. Let's move to 347-883. Do you have a question or comment to share? 347.
I'm here.
Hotep.
What's up? Greetings. How you doing, Dr. Valentine? This is Anaya, friend of Marlon's.
Yes, how are you?
I am well, thank you. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. Thank you for asking.
You're very welcome. I don't have a question really per se. I'm just being a student, taking notes, learning as usual, and I am so very appreciative. Much gratitude. I do have a question that's very, very far off the point, but I was going to call you soon anyway. You did some paperwork for the baby some time ago, and I was wondering if I would be able to start that process on this side of things, and then we do an exchange in person when I see you, because I'll be at that event. That's all I wanted to know.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
I don't want to put too – you did paperwork for the children?
Oh, you're talking about the vaccination exemption package. Yeah.
Right.
That's
okay, so it is okay for me to speak about that on air. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with that because I'm not doing anything against the law. You know, that is the law, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem. We could talk about that. I'm going to give my number. That number is 1-800-847-1291. Again, 1-800-847-1291. Just leave your name, And please speak clearly. Say your number twice, because sometimes people, their connections are very, very bad. And I feel badly if I can't get all their information to call them back. So please make sure that you have, you know, you speak clearly into the microphone. This goes for everyone else. But, yes, we do have that service, the vaccination exemption package. You can speak about, you know, what it entails, the price and so forth. But we also have, you know, our services have to do with our university, which we have our semesters. You can also call that number for it. And you can call that number also for our products, the Juice Plus product, as well as any information about my book, as well as consultations, because we do naturopathic health consultations as well.
Awesome. I guess it was a good thing I brought that up, because thinking about it, I think now is like one of the most crucial times ever for people to be, you know, looking into that, the vaccine exemption afterwards.
Yeah.
It's crucial.
And quiet as it's kept. Most people are pissed off with Trump, but he's the one going after the CDC and the vaccination paradigm. And I don't understand why it is that we're so pissed off with him about that. You know, why are we pissed off with the fact
exactly.
that he wants to hold CDC's feet to the fire?
Well, right.
You know,
yeah,
we're just
right.
looking
exactly.
for all the wrong things. If we got anybody, I don't care if it's a porpoise that jumps up on thing, grows legs and says, I'm going to support them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going
mm-hmm.
after the CDC because of his son and it's his personal, hey, if it happened to my son, I'd take it personally too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So why look a gift horse in the mouth? If he's going after the CDC, let's go after the CDC too. And let me tell you something. In doing the vaccination package, I'm the first one to introduce this vaccination package in the so-called black community across the country back in 1983. Okay? First one to put together a package for our people. I have had the worst time dealing with Democratic administration. I had a better time dealing with Republicans because of their need, their dealing with the Constitution and religious freedom than I did with Obama. I had a better time with Bush teaching that and giving that and the people getting to accept that than I did under Obama, 8 years, to tell you the truth. Because most of the vaccination, the pro-vaccination legislation was passed by Obama.
Wow. That's a whole other thing. Could we say that was all because of the strong puppetry that was going on, you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that. You know, he's part of the New World Order. Yeah, he's part of the New World Order.
Okay. Well, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that he was going after the CDC, that Trump was. So
yes,
he is.
Better about. Okay.
Yes, he is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna chime out for now. Thank you so
thank
much,
you.
And I will be seeing you again in a month. All right. Be well.
Okay. Thank you.
Check up.
We got a packed house, big brother. You ready for?
Oh,
before we take
longer.
The next call. Okay, could you share with us about Juice Plus? What's the benefits of having Juice Plus?
I'd love to. Yes, I'd love to. Again, the story of Juice Plus is the reason why I'm that my wife, Dr. Nalani Valentine, she introduced me to the product because a friend of hers had introduced it, and we used to go to these seminars where people would be starting business. We had just moved to Florida, and we were looking to start a network down here. And we ran into someone who was actually a promoter and a distributor of Juice Plus. So we began to look into it. I'm not a product pusher. You know me from way back when. I don't like pushing products. So she went on board with it because she studied it. I didn't take the time to do that. But after I began studying it and I got into the history of it, I began to see how they put the product together, what they did to make the product. They went to nothing but mom-and-pop farmers. They didn't go to factory farmers. They're dealing with a higher grade, higher than the organic brand that the FDA gives. It's called the NSA branding of purity, the one that the Olympics use. And I've also found out that the one who made the formula for Juice Plus was an old teacher of mine. guy named Umbat Santillo. And Umbat Santillo gave me my first certification for herbology. And it was, and I got it together with an old friend of ours, John Harris. So when that kicked in, and when that kicked in and I found out that it was Umbat Santillo who was a hygienist, and he took that same formula before it became Juice Plus, that formula, he, his father, this is the story of the product. His father was dying of esophageal cancer, so he couldn't eat. So he had to feed his father rectally. They gave his father a month, less than a month to live. His father lived 2.5 years after he put together a formula and fed his father rectally, because we know that all of these things, like autism and everything, is not in the brain. It's in the bowels, in the intestinal flora. So he fed his father through the intestines, and his father lived for 2.5 years beyond that point. So that particular formula that he put together is the purity of the formula that Juice Plus used. So I would suggest definitely that people call in, and Dr. Nalani doesn't care. She says I can give everybody her direct number. I don't like giving my direct number. So you can call her directly if you want to deal with Juice Plus. Don't be calling her to try to, you know, pump her for information. If you're calling her, call her for business, because she's very, very busy. Her number is 646-510-6702. 646-510-6702. And if you want to know anything about that product and how great it is, she will give you the skinny on it. And not only that, if you feel after you've tried the product, because that's what we do, we wait for people to actually be on the product for a while. And it takes 4 months for your body to actually renew its blood cells, so you get a 4-month supply right up front. And so when you're dealing with that food, a food product, you're not going to get a rush in the beginning, because we don't deal with drugs. We don't deal with stimulants. Juice Plus is a food. It is nothing but fruits, vegetables, and berries, dehydrated.
Mm.
And so you're getting 30, you're getting a combination of 26 to 30 fruits, vegetables, and berries combined. I don't care how much of a vegetarian or vegan you get, you don't get that much concentrated vegetables in your body at one time. But Juice Plus is a support mechanism. It isn't a what they call a alternative to taking in vegetables or fruits. We don't say that. It's not a supplement either, because supplements are fragmented. We are dealing with whole food nutrition. So I would suggest that people who are suffering from things like arthritis and so forth, we don't make claims that it heals you or it cures you, but we know that the body heals itself if given the proper nutrients. And Juice Plus, we give it to, if you were there at that lecture that I did that time when I was answering the questions, and that woman who just had her baby, she had to leave her house. The baby was born, it was just 4 days old, and that woman came up. She was there on the Juice Plus program. She came up to the microphone to testify that the baby had a 9.2 APGAR reading test. Now, the APGAR is what the doctors do to check, to test the response of the baby. And they have certain responses that test the baby for alertness. And they have it from, like, you know, from 0 to 10, but nobody ever gets a 10. But all of the people who we deal with in Juice Plus who start out, and don't take them horse pills that they give them. If they start out and they take their Juice Plus and enhance it and take more of the Juice Plus, they come out with babies kicking and screaming and healthy. So it's a proven fact that the Juice Plus works. And I know I sound like a damn commercial, but I'm not doing that. I'm just telling you exactly what is. I'm very excited about it because it saved my skin. It had me be able to talk for 10 and 12 hours at a time, and you know I can run my mouth. So essentially, that's what I do. That's what I do. I take Juice Plus.
I watched you, and I was like, what is he running on? So that's why I asked the question. You didn't say anything. I asked, because I never forgot that. At the end of the show, I was like, you know, they didn't carry you out on a stretcher. You were still holding firm, you know? So that's why I asked.
Well, hey, listen. Yo, hey. I hold a record for speaking straight, 11 and three quarters hours. 11 Woo! And three quarters hours out in California, Los Angeles, and I hold that record. Bobby was before me. He went 10 and a half hours.
You know, I only got one question. Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
Did she listen to you? did she listen to you?
Yeah. Listen. Yeah, but you know, it's so funny. The people were there, and, you know, Brandy and all of them were there, but the people that came there, it was 500 people because it was stacked packed all the way to the back of the auditorium. By the time we left late that night, there was at least 200 people still there. Some of them were dead asleep. They were laying on the ground, but they were listening.
Wow. Wow. I think I need to get me a swig. I think I want to get a swig of some Juice Plus.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Juice Plus comes in capsules, so you can actually open it up and put it into your blending material.
Yeah. Could you give her number one more time?
Yes. Dr. Nalani Valentine, and that's spelled N-A-L-A-N-I, Nalani Valentine, and her number is 646-510-702.
Thank you. I know we're on at 8:30 hour. You want any more calls, or you want to close out? It's your call.
I'll take one or two more, and I got to close out because I'm still working. I kind of cut my research into the lecture I'm going to be giving. By the way, I've got a name for it. Everybody was wanting to know what the name is about, and I'm probably going to see this meme come up. Everybody's kind of talking about the so-called Mandela effect. Well, I'm dealing with the Mandela effect is a real thing, and we're going to see whether or not it's nothing more than an operational mind control situation, but I'm going to go deeper into it. But instead of me calling it the Mandela effect, to me, essentially, with operation mind control going on, it's actually the Mandela defect. And the subtitle of the Mandela defect is the tactical manipulation of perception for the resynchronization of reality. Okay?
Oh boy. That makes me think of, that makes me think of, what's the name of that goal that everybody's, you called it hyperdimensional crack. Monatomic goal.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I was like, I never heard of hyperdimensional crack. That's whack. You know, so we're going to take a call. 704-957. Let's see if the line opens up on this antiquated Mac I have. Looking for it to open up. 704-957. I'm waiting on my blog talk to open. And it seems like it's not opening yet. Okay. All right. Let us try one more. 718-756. 718-756. Do you have a question? I guess not. Okay. All right, Phil, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. It was an excellent show. Packed house, and there's a bunch of other folks online. However, you can reach Phil and your contact information one more time, brother.
The number is 800-847-91. Again, 847-1291, area code 1-800. Now, you can reach me on Facebook at Sunu, S-U-N-N-U, Valentine. Sunu, S as in science, U-N-N-U, Valentine. One more thing. Our website is going live in the next couple of days. Look out for our website at www.uks. That's U as in United, K as in King, S as in Science, N-O-W, the word now, .org, UKSNOW.org. Keep checking for it. because we will be going live very soon. And on there, you will get all of what it is that we have as our services for the university. We also do have, and this is another service that we have, and this is for those people who think that we're just talkers. We're not. We are one of the first people who started the universities online. In fact, we are the first ones who started university online teaching live at the university in the world at this point, because the technology at that time was essentially for, it was very expensive, and it was actually used by CEOs to communicate with their people across the country, CEOs from big corporations. We took that and turned it into a medium for teaching brothers and sisters the high sciences. And now they have the big colleges at this time are now teaching in that same format and pretty much charging tuition that pretty much matches our tuition every month. So, yes, we are pioneers in dealing with things that serve our community. So if you are interested, you can go to our website. Also, we have it for children. The University of Commission Sciences is for the adults. The Institute for Self-Mastery is for the children. We do have a child or a what we call homeschooling venue online for our youth starting at the age of 7. It goes all the way up into high school. And we are definitely taking people in. You can call that 800 number as well. And if you are interested in the ISM, and I will give you the number to another to our administrative assistant if you wish to getting out of or at least enhancing your children's education and get them out of that deducation, we call it, and go forward with that. So if you are interested, please hold on for a couple of more days and go up to uksnow.org. That's our new website, part of the first page, which is the home page. Part of that artwork was done, the greater part of the artwork was done by Machindo, the master artist who used to do for Marvel, a good friend. And he took an idea and a template of mine and put that together and came up with a monstrous, beautiful, absolutely beautiful home page for us. I put in my little piece and did some doctoring, as well as a young gentleman, a young brother by the name of Junior Coggins. He also was responsible for helping me to do the actual template. That design you see there, that piece that you see on the cover of The Wounded Womb, was done by Junior Coggins. He's a great artist himself. So, again, that's what I was saying to you. You see the testimonials. That's the thing. A lot of people don't realize that we have made an impact with our community. Go up to the website and look at the testimonials for those who have attended our university, and then you'll see exactly what kind of work we're doing here. And it's not to brag. It's just to actually let you know that there is a place for you to go to feel comfortable about your journey towards enlightenment. And again, little brother, Hank, Rising Sun, you know, you've always been an inspiration. You've constantly kept that energy alive. You know, you're a dynamo yourself when it comes to actually getting people off their feet and making people feel that they have that special part of themselves that they can always discover. You and Lester Loving, I'm glad that the two of you all are doing this. We need people from the old school who understand how it's done, you know, or why it's even done. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to reach out to the family.
Oh, I want to throw one question that will you cover this, will you at the event on Sunday, and I'm going to announce it one more time, it's going to be at it's a King Simon production, and it will be happening
on Remsen.
St. Francis.
St. Francis College. College on Remsen Street. St. Francis College, downtown Brooklyn on Remsen Street. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's Sunday, February 26, 2017. Call King Simon at 347-496-1022. At this event, Phil, will you share with the listening audience the connection between perming the hair and fibroids? And you, will you cover that at the event?
I think my elder brother, I think my elder brother Dick Gregory did an exceptional job of that already. Anytime, I already told everyone that the hair, and I'll cut with this, that your hair is an extension of your kidneys as well as your liver. So if you are doing anything to damage the natural copper in your hair, because black people have helixed hair, which means they have an inordinate amount of copper in that area so that they can pick up information, okay?
Yes.
They can pick up higher quality spiritual vibration. So it's reason why it's coiled. If you look at any electrical circuitry, they coil the copper in order for it to actually work properly. That's how energy works in spirals. So essentially you are killing the very thing that your kidneys and the strength of your ancestors, because your hair is actually connected to your kidneys as well. Your kidneys is the seat of your ancestors' energy. So every time you do that to your hair, you offend your kidneys, and that also leads to the fibroid tumors, but it leads to what they call the urinary tract infections and susceptibilities to that.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for that. Thank you. And on that
very
note,
welcome.
We are going to close out with Baba Olatunde, Mystery of Love. Thank you again, Phil, and we'll be talking soon.
You're most welcome. Take care.
Take care. Okay. It's not playing, so everyone in the audience, thank you. And I'm going to try to close out this show with a dysfunctional computer. Thank you.